The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us this morning as certified financial planner Jim Saulnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
On today's show, we're going to answer a couple of email questions that have come in. One on how to construct a home or how to finance the construction of a home in retirement. Also, we're going to go through a list of proposed changes to IRAs as proposed by a fine senator from the northwestern part of the United States. Some interesting proposals. This still a long ways off from becoming law, but just kind of opens the discussion about some of the changes that might be coming out of Washington, D.C. in regards to your IRA, Roth and otherwise. So welcome to today's show. My name is Chris Stein. I'm here with Jim Saulnier.
Good morning.
Good afternoon and good evening.
Good afternoon for us.
Mm-hmm. And Jim sounds a little odd because he'll have cough drops constantly in his mouth during this show.
I have had a cold that I cannot shake.
There's a cold going around. My wife is stuck in that same cold. It's a lengthy ordeal.
Yes. I thought I was getting better yesterday, yep. And then Justin came in sick, and I think he regave it to me.
Yeah. So I'm not sure that can happen medically, but...
It can happen.
Maybe psychologically.
No. I always blame someone else but me for getting the
cold. Well, I know that, but getting the same thing back from someone. The reason why you get over it is your body finds a way to defend itself.
Yeah, but
itself.
The germ's in him, so it's a different germ.
Everybody has a different germ?
It mutates.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's Justin who's the mutant, right?
I don't know. So. But I will apologize to people ahead of time. I will probably be coughing several times on the show.
You can always flip your little switcheroo there.
I can shut it off a little bit to cough. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this cold is from you know where. It begins with an H. Mm-hmm. And it won't go away.
Havana?
Havana, yes. Mm-hmm. It's a Havana cold.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have opened contact with Cuba now, so we're getting that kind of thing up here.
Okay, well, we've got a lot on the docket on today's Retirement and IRA Show. We want to welcome everybody in Northern Colorado. This is a live recorded show, so do not call. Was it last week or the week before? We just aced it with calls.
Week before. Week before last.
Ton of calls. Six or seven calls. That was really good. I enjoyed that. So we will be live again, not for a while. Yours truly will be going. What are you doing?
You're touching my mouse pad.
That piece of paper is your mouse pad.
Yes.
Sorry.
Because the texture of this table causes my mouse to freak out. So
keep it up. I'll cough on you.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to be live. Let me see here. Next weekend. Next week is going to be a pre-recorded show as well because I am going elk hunting. And I think it's... Okay, next Tuesday we can pre-record as well. And then after that, I'm going elk hunting. So we'll have to talk, but I'm not going to be here to record on Tuesday the 4th. So either you could go live maybe the 8th with Peter... Or
How long are you going elk hunting?
The 4th through the 10th.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of elk.
It's a lot of
hunting. Takes you 6 days to hunt for an elk?
We have to drive there.
I can drive 35 minutes from here and see a whole giant herd of them. How?
Yeah, it's called Rocky Mountain National Park.
Well, yeah.
And you're not allowed to shoot them there.
Well, wait till they wander out.
So, no, I'm going to Mika, which is on the West Slope.
Who?
Mika.
Mika?
Mika. Mika, Colorado. You never heard of Mika?
Oh, Meeker. Oh, okay. I thought you were mispronouncing Mika, like M-I-C-A. No, that's, for those of you out in radio land, he's saying Meeker, M-E-E-K-E-R, which is a fine town on the western slope of Colorado.
That's where we're going. That's what I said,
mm-hmm.
Mika.
Mika. Mm-hmm.
So we're going to Mika to hunt.
That sounds like someplace in Alaska.
No, it's on the west slope of Colorado. It's our first time going there, and apparently mm-hmm. it takes like 5 hours to get there. So
true.
We're leaving Tuesday the 4th. We're going to hunt the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th. Mm-hmm. And we may come back the night of the 9th or the day of the 10th.
Interesting.
So nonetheless, the whole point of this tirade is you're going to have to find someone to record with on the 4th or go live on the 8th. So audience,
this is my burden now?
I'm going to be out hunting.
Okay.
So on the 8th, y'all may have Chris and Peter live.
Or a best of.
Or a best of, which would be a letdown.
There's some really good best of shows out there.
We could do the Kulak one.
Oh, my God. No, we can't.
Well, you never know. We got three to choose from. Mm-hmm. So, anyways, so we will be live with yours truly sometime after the 8th of October. For our iTunians who listen whenever they want, then this whole exercise was in futility for you because it doesn't matter. You never listen to us live anyways. But we do encourage people, whether you're local or in another state, to contact Chris and I. We have two email questions that we got this week. We've been nailing them with email questions, so we really appreciate it. And Chris is super excited.
I am.
Because he's grabbing his little list of stars. He has a new star. We have Kentucky, my future home.
He says that he's never even been there.
Never been there, but I'm looking for states to move
to. It's a cool shape. I will say that on the map. We're boring out here, just a big old rectangle.
I just figured Kentucky would be green.
It's purple on this map.
Purple on the map. But in reality, it must
green.
Get mm-hmm. snow and rain. So I get all four seasons.
And muggy.
Mm-hmm. I don't think it... No, it's too far north. I don't think you'll get humidity there.
Oh, yes.
In Kentucky?
You've never been to Ohio?
No.
Which is just as even farther north?
Why, Ohio's humid too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yes. You have to breathe with a spoon. You have to scoop it out of the air, put it in your mouth.
Well, I'll have to do a weather report. Yeah. But for those who don't know, I hope to retire in 12 to 15 years, and I'm getting fed up with Colorado, getting fed up with the cost, the smog, the pollution, the people
moving
in. There's no
smog.
There is. It's everywhere. There's too many people moving here. So I may move out. And Kentucky was one of my choices, and this email came
which
from...
Which you just chose randomly from the map without knowing anything about it.
No, I haven't done
which
my research
fine.
Yet.
I just don't, you know, once you compare it to Colorado, I think you'll find why people are moving here, not from here to Kentucky.
Pacific Northwest is another option.
I like that area.
Mm-hmm. The Oregon coast.
Oh, yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, isn't it? Yeah.
Yep, gets your seafood again like you had back home.
Exactly. But then I wonder if mm-hmm. the moisture as I age would bother my bones.
I think it helps your skin be less leathery.
As I age?
Yeah.
Okay. But anyways, we'll talk about this on another show in 15 years when I'm retiring.
Okay, that's a good idea.
Okay, so
I'm trying to find a star that doesn't clash. Oh, orange, that's perfect.
That's perfect.
Orange is going to go on there.
So we want to thank our Kentuckian.
Are we going to read his question?
We are. So I want to thank our Kentuckian for the email. And Chris was very excited because he got to put a star on. The mm-hmm. next email was from a gentleman in Missouri. Or as Chris would, Peter would say, is he Missouri or Missouri? Pete was the Missouri.
One of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Pete was in some part of Missouri when he grew up. Pete's not here today. But we did get an email from Missouri. But unfortunately, for Chris's sake, we already had a star on Missouri.
True.
And for those who don't know what we're doing, especially iTunians, those in other states who are listening to us off of the internet, Chris is trying to fill the map of the United States.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be really stressful when we get down to like one state.
Yeah, because we're going to be pleading from from that one state.
Right.
But he's doing pretty good. He's got about half the United States filled in. Any call-outs you want to give to somebody in a certain state?
I'm counting. We have 27 states covered, so we're beyond half.
We're beyond half.
Yes.
Any give us two or three states you need something from.
Well, we've almost completely surrounded West Virginia. So actually, we have surrounded it. So it'd be nice if we'd clean up that area of the United States.
So you need a West Virginian.
We guess Virginian. We've surrounded South Carolina as well. We're invading from Georgia and North Carolina. We've got those covered, but South
Carolina. Tennessee.
And Tennessee doesn't touch South Carolina, but I guess you could leap over
North Carolina and get to Tennessee.
Yeah.
So Tennessee's kind of blocking. So you want South Carolina and West Virginia.
Okay. Then we'd clean up. We'd have most of the eastern
East Coast,
area
yeah.
covered. Yeah.
Perfect. So if anybody out there in iTunian world is from West Virginia or the fine state of South Carolina, Chris would encourage you to send us an email. You can go to Jim Helps. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S, jimhelps.com. That's our website. Click the Contact Us button and send us an email question. If you have a question about Social Security, retirement, investments, annuities, anything of that nature, we will read your question on the air and answer it. And then Chris gets to put another star and essentially take care of the entire Eastern Seaboard.
Yeah. And maybe someone from Western West Virginia can explain to Jim that the lack of humidity in that area.
Are you sure Kentucky's humid? Have
yes.
you been to Kentucky?
I have.
And was it humid?
Yes.
I'm going
to
ask
compared to here,
Kentucky.
Everything is pretty much. But it's yes. It's the when you go outside, your shirt immediately gets moist and remains that way the rest of the day.
Hmm. I just figured it would. It was voted one of the top five states to retire to recently.
By whom?
I read it on Yahoo Finance.
Hmm.
South Carolina was one, too.
Cool.
Just want to point that out.
Okay.
Okay. But anyways, I'll worry about where I am going to move to in 15 years. Maybe I'll get used to Colorado again and the crowds and the cost. And it's kind of like Calirado. I call it Calirado. Instead of California, it's Calirado.
I think it's more Texarado because
no,
I think there's more Texans here than Californians.
It's not more Texas. It's more Californians.
Okay.
They're moving.
Maybe we should get on with the retirement and IRA
we should.
Show.
Okay. So let's get to our Kentucky question first.
Yes.
And it's a very short one, so it's easy. Mm-hmm. It says, I have a question pertaining to 401k spillover contributions. Mm. And that first confused me because I never heard the verbiage spillover. So I contacted him, and I thought I knew what it meant. I think he's talking about contributions into his 401k beyond the $18,000 he can put in and deduct. Some 401ks allow you to put extra contributions in. Mm-hmm. They're generally non-deductible, but you can put additional money in.
Right.
And he did confirm that. He got back to me, says, yes. He said his plan custodian is Fidelity, and he said Fidelity referred to those as spillover. And I guess I can see their euphemism, is that what it's called? Like a cup mm-hmm. spilling over?
So in the cup, it's pre-tax. But then once everything that spills over that is post-tax.
Mm-hmm. So I kind of get where Fidelity was going. I just never heard that. So again, he begins, I have a question pertaining to 401k spillover contributions. I will exceed the $18,000 maximum contribution for a person under 50 by a few hundred bucks each year. My plan accepts these spillover contributions. I am wondering if these spillover contributions can be rolled into a Roth IRA when I separate from service. I am seeking to clarify if I could do this rollover in service as well. Any information is appreciated. As luck would have it, we talked in an entire show on this in October 2014. Because in October of 2014, the IRS passed a revenue ruling specifically addressing this person's question. Mm-hmm. Because for eons, people have been wanting to successfully separate money from a 401k that's been taxed already from money that hasn't been taxed and move the money that's already been taxed to a Roth IRA and the money that's never been taxed to a traditional IRA.
And before this revenue ruling, the problem was they were any distributions from your 401k were mixed. It was determined that if it came out proportionally, pre-tax and post-tax dollars, so it was impossible to separate them and direct them to two different places or specify just the post-tax dollars to head for a Roth. So this revenue ruling cleared that up and specifically allowed this behavior.
Yes, and there's a lot involved in it, and we don't want to get into it because we're just going to rehash a show we already did. So the one thing I did notice is I tried to search for the show. I couldn't find it. Chris and I were just talking about this before we went started recording. So we're going to try to get our web person to get that show at least back up because the information in that show is still accurate. And that show has how you're supposed to do this. But it can be done. Absolutely can be done. And as this gentleman in his email indicated, Chris, he's trying to find out if he can do it while in service. What he means by that is some 401ks allow you, while you are still working, to move your 401k.
Well, I think he asked once he separates from service, which he'll
correct.
Be able to.
But he also said, I'm seeking to clarify. Right. Yeah. I'm seeking to clarify if I could do this rollover in service as well. I took that, and I never asked him about that sentence because I just thought he meant he's seeking to clarify with his employer if they offer in-service withdrawals.
And that's who he'd have to clarify
he'd
that
have
with.
To clarify with, because the IRS perfectly allows it. If your employer authorizes you to do an in-service distribution, which is essentially moving some of the money, not all of it. They restrict which money you can get. But some of the money from your 401k while you are still working there, then the IRS ruled into this tax notice. It was tax notice 2014-54. They acknowledged that in-service distributions, they'll allow it as well. But there are steps that have to be followed. So that's the big thing I want our listeners to understand. We hope, excuse me, we hope to get this missing recording back up. But in the meantime, I sent him a copy of the Ed Slott October 2014 newsletter, which is almost 8 pages of this revenue ruling and telling you how to do it. And he emailed me back, thank you very much. The newsletter had everything I wanted. So if anybody out there is interested... Goodness, I knew this was going to be a trouble trying to record today. If anybody out there is interested and I can't get the show back up on the website yet, simply send me an email. Go to jimhelps.com, jimhelps.com. Go to jimhelps.com, click on the Contact Us button. Send me an email that you would like the newsletter on this revenue ruling or IRS notice 2014-54, and I'll be happy to send you the newsletter that... pretty much the newsletter served as our template for that show anyways that we recorded a while ago, Chris.
Right. And for those of you listening that are thinking, well, why would he do that? Why wouldn't he just direct that money into his Roth via a contribution and not play this game of putting it temporarily in his 401k and then rolling it over? He may very well, especially with the size of the contributions he's making, he may very well fall into the income range where he is prohibited from making direct Roth contributions.
And that's what I assumed.
And he didn't say that in there, but I'm sure there's people out there thinking, simplify this, guys. Why don't you just tell him to put the money directly in the Roth? He may not be able to.
Right. And especially answer. Because he said he's only spilling over, as he worded it, or Fidelity worded it, a few hundred dollars a year. I'm going to encourage him to try to get more than a few hundred dollars in if he could. We are huge proponents of the Roth, but of course we didn't do an analysis on him of what his current tax situation is, what his future tax situation is going to be. I just assume because he seemed fairly knowledgeable in his email to us, he's done this already and he's made a determination that at least for this $18,000, it's best for him to put it in a deductible account. And anything over that, he makes too much money to contribute. And I'm also assuming he has an existing IRA, so a backdoor Roth isn't an option for him. I made a lot of assumptions here, but I answered his question by sending him a copy of that newsletter, and that's kind of what I want to encourage people. We're not going to give the answer here because you know how Chris goes on and on and on.
Exactly.
It would take him 2 hours to explain it. So since we already did a whole two-hour show on it, I just want to encourage people to go to our website. Hopefully within a few weeks we'll have that show back up. If not, email me, jim@jimhelps.com, and I'll be glad to send you a copy of the October 2014 Ed Slott newsletter, which is nearly 8 pages dedicated to this notice and how to do exactly that, how to move the after-tax money from your 401k into a Roth while moving the pre-tax money in your 401k to an IRA.
Perfect. So that's our email from Kentucky. So that gives us our star upon Kentucky. Are we going to hit the email from Missouri now?
We will get to the Missouri email right now, but no star because we already have
already
a Missouri.
Have a nice purple star on there.
We do have a Missourian already.
We appreciate the email from Missouri nonetheless.
Now, this email from Missouri came in Monday, September 19th, so that's pretty new.
It is pretty new.
That's like yesterday.
That's yesterday.
Yep. Okay. So
we're caught up.
We did, which is a rarity for me to be actually caught up. The Kentucky email, September 14th, so we weren't too far behind on that one either.
No, perfect.
Okay, this one is really way too long to read. I think you would agree.
Yeah, summary would be good.
I'm going to summarize it, yes. And I want to first begin by acknowledging I'm very impressed with this man. He is contacting us for something he's going to do in 15 years. And he wrote in here, he's just trying to be proactive and make sure everything he's doing today that's leading up to what he wants to do in 15 years is correct. Mm-hmm. So I was very impressed that this man is trying to do planning. You don't see that too often. I also want to caution him and our listeners, any answer I give you today, don't rely on it in 15 years.
Things change.
Exactly. Right. So we're going to be answering this based on the rules, the regulations, the taxes, the issues of today. I don't know if they're going to apply in 15 years.
Right.
So he's always going to have to monitor this. But long story short, the man is 50 years old. He wants to retire at 65. Mm-hmm. He right now has a house with a $200,000 mortgage on it, and he will have it fully paid off by time he retires. At 65. At 65. Mm-hmm. At 65, well, beginning actually at 64, he is going to start building his second house. This retirement home, the home he wants to retire into.
Right.
He estimates he will have saved cash in bank $200,000 by then. Mm-hmm. He also feels, like I said, his home mortgage will be paid off. He also assumes his Roth account will have $300,000 in it, based on his calculations. He didn't get into how much he's contributing, how the money got in there, any of that. He just figured he'll have $300,000 in the Roth, $200,000 in the bank, and a house fully paid off that I would assume, I don't know how much homes appreciate in his part of Missouri, but I assume it would be worth more than $200,000. Mm-hmm. His concern slash question was, he doesn't feel, Chris, he can build the new home for the $200,000 cash that he has saved. So he feels he's going to have to borrow money to build the house. And he was confused on what type of loans people would use because he cannot sell his house. He knows he's going to have the rest of his money in his home, but he's got to live in his home as he's building his new home. And he said to me, how does somebody with a home who can't sell the home use the money in the home to help build a house to get him out of the home? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
He needs to build. He's got to take the money from the home he's in without moving out of it. Use it with the $200,000 he has to build his new home. He doesn't want to carry a mortgage. And then sell the home. How can he do all this? So he thought he would do it as a 60-day rollover from his Roth, and he wanted to know what we felt about that. Or he wanted to pick our brain if we knew of any loan options that would be available to him. I'm going to have Chris answer this for a few reasons. He kind of knows more about real estate than I do, and he doesn't have a sore throat. I need to rest my vocal cords. But I think when Chris comes back from this break, I'll let you do the loan because you had some good loan ideas. And then I'm going to address his idea of trying to do this as a 60-day rollover, which I'm sure you know I would not be a fan of.
No, and for very specific reasons, really. So generally, we don't encourage people to use their Roth or traditional IRA, for that matter, as a loan source because of the things that can go wrong with that transaction. But real estate in particular is troublesome for this kind of technique. Not that it can't be done, but it's a little nerve-wracking, a little risky. So that music means we're going to head for a short break here. When we come back from this short break, we are going to hear the number one song, or at least one of the top songs from 1935, the year that Social Security started. And this is a top 10 jazz hit performed by a Duke.
Duke.
So
Duke Ellington.
We'll find out.
That's the only other Duke.
We'll
I
find
know.
Out who that is.
Or is it Duke Wellington? Is it Ellington or Wellington?
We'll clear that up when we come back from the break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. It is one of the top songs from back in 1935, the year that Social Security started, which, of course, is a very important part of most people's retirement planning. Thus, the tie into our show on the Retirement and IRA Show here. That is Duke Ellington. It's not Duke Wellington. You need to turn your microphone on, Jim.
I was right.
It's Beef Wellington.
That's I said the, Duke Ellington or Wellington. I didn't know which one it was.
I'm clarifying. The Wellington is not the Duke. It's that would
beef.
Be beef. So, yes.
That was close.
You were in the ballpark, yes.
I said Ellington first or Wellington. I covered all bases.
Yep. Or Orwellian, but let's not go that direction. We got in trouble with that
we
show.
We did when we did a George Orwell thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a bad review on
bad
that.
Bad review. Yeah. I don't blame him. That's not really retirement IRA. So back to our question that we left standing.
Well,
before,
did you, never?
No, not yet.
Okay.
So we had an emailer from the fine state of Missouri who had emailed us mentioning that he was 50 years old, planning to retire at 65, at that time build his retirement home using approximately $200,000 that he will have saved in a bank, for instance. Plus, he will have a $200,000 mortgage on his existing home paid off, so he'll own a home free and clear. And he wants to build this new house, ultimately then selling the original house. But he was wondering how he could finance, how he could get a loan so that he could build a house that's going to cost more than just the $200,000 in cash that he would have. And he mentioned mortgages, and that is one option. And he mentioned tapping his Roth IRA for such a thing. Either he mentioned as a 60-day rollover, but you could tap a Roth IRA just by taking the money out as well. That's another option. So Jim will make some comments about the Roth version. The mortgage option, a few things to consider. First of all, there are construction loans. There's loans that you can get during construction, and they even have loans that will transition from that construction loan into a traditional mortgage once the home is finished, so that you just kind of have to do all the paperwork one time instead of arranging two completely separate transactions. Those are kind of nice. That's an option. Though at 65, if he has stopped working, he might have trouble qualifying for that type of situation because he has no income. The other option, which also would generally require proof of income, would be taking out a home equity loan on his current home, which I mentioned at that time he has plans to have it paid off. He could do that. Another option, if this is ultimately his goal, between now and the end, you know, between now and 65, which would be 15 years from now, if he has a really competitive rate on his current mortgage, and 15 years from now, who knows what mortgage rates will be on a new home equity loan. But if he has a really nice rate, maybe it would make more sense, instead of trying to pay off that home, piling more money up outside of the home in anticipation, so he has more, instead of kind of split half and half between the home and cash, try to get a lot more built up as cash. That would be something to consider. We'd have to look at the numbers as a possibility there. But in this day and age with super low interest rates, there might be some logic in not paying down
the mortgage
quite so fast.
Exactly, because he plans on selling that house anyways.
Right.
So if he has a low interest rate and his home is appreciating at a rate faster than that low interest rate, what you are advocating would make sense.
Mm-hmm. So that's, and again, we'd have to look at specific numbers to make a more definitive recommendation there, but something to consider. And then there are even styles of mortgages that after you reach age 62, you don't have to show proof of income. It's just all a matter of having equity in your home. So that would be a different option that isn't available today to him, but would be available after he reaches age 62. So there are a few different mortgage type options that might.
And people do this all the time. I want the listener to know his situation isn't unique. So any type of good mortgage broker or banker, and again, we don't know in 14 years because he wants to do this when he's 64, start building for retirement at 65. They can assist you with the bridge loans. You may take out, you'll have, even if you have your house paid off, he could take out a mortgage on his existing house and use that. He'd probably get better interest than a bridge loan because a bridge loan, you start, it's called a construction loan. There is no equity yet, so the interest rates are quite high or relatively higher on a construction slash bridge loan that could assist in the building of this home. But with him bringing $200,000 to the table, they may have him use his $200,000 first to get most of the home done and then a traditional mortgage on top of that because now he has equity in it. Or he could take out a mortgage on his existing home, even if he pays it off. He could take out a short-term mortgage. We would recommend no prepayment penalties because obviously you're going to pay it off. So that's an option. Or as Chris said, once you get the age of 62, there are other types of mortgages. Henry Winkler is talking about them a lot on late night TV. But you can take out one of those mortgages to anybody over the age of 62. There will be no money that you have to pay back. And then you get about half the value of your home you would be able to borrow. So if he has a $200,000 home today, but it's going to be worth maybe $400,000 in 15 years, there's another $200,000 he could easily get. As Chris alluded to, those mortgages available to people over the age of 62, you don't have to have proof of payments, proof of income. They're a really unique approach. But there's any number of ways, I guess, is what Chris and I are trying to say, that he can fund this.
Correct. But what about his question about the
60-day
rollover?
I'm less excited with him using the money in his Roth. That money, you don't want to take a chance, number one. Number two, I don't even know if 60-day rollovers are going to be allowed in 15 years. Mm-hmm. And
the chance we're talking about is the issue that if you don't get the money back in within 60 days, it's considered a distribution. And if he's going to pull a significant amount out, you might say, well, he's going to end up paying taxes on it anyway, and he'll be
well,
past
he won't.
The
There's
penalty.
A Roth.
Oh, you're right. He'll be past the any penalty age, any sort of thing like that, but he will not be able to keep that money in there with tax-free growth going forward.
Exactly.
So there is a reason why you would want to keep it in the Roth till you truly need to take it out. And because anybody who has done a real estate transaction should know, even if you were lucky enough to have your real estate transaction go perfectly fine and right on time, that's the exception. Usually things end up going longer, especially when you're constructing something. It just inevitably goes longer than what you expect, and you have a hard deadline of the 60 days to get it back in there. And I'd be really nervous about using that
exactly.
money for a real estate.
So any of the types of loans that we talked about, the bridge loans, the traditional mortgage loans, the special loans for people over the age of 62, those are the ones that we think you should really look for and use. I'd be very hesitant to tell you to do it as a 60-day rollover. In other words, you worked your whole life. You got hundreds of thousands of dollars tax-free inside a Roth because you're over the age of 59 and a half now. This is the year before you retire at 65. You're going to be 64. You have hundreds of thousands of dollars in a Roth. You're going to take a few hundred thousand out and hope you can sell your existing home within 60 days of needing this money and replace it, it's not going to happen. Delays will happen. Now, having a distribution from a Roth of $200,000 or $300,000 is not going to hurt you tax-wise. It's 100% tax-free. No penalties, no taxes. The problem is you no longer have the benefit of the Roth. Roth IRAs are 100% protected from bankruptcy. Depending on your state, the state of Colorado protects them from creditors. I don't know about Missouri. You would have to check. But they're protected from bankruptcy and in Colorado from creditors. And they grow 100% tax-free, so they're protected from the IRS. And that, to me, is worth a lot. Mm-hmm. And he gets this money out and can't get it back in. Yes, he won't be hit with bad taxes, but he's not going to have this money in a Roth. And that's where it's far more valuable to him, especially as a retiree. There is no required minimum distributions from Roth IRAs, so you can continue to let that Roth grow well into retirement. And when you do take money from a Roth, it will not subject your Social Security to taxes. And if that's your only income is Social Security and money you have saved, you're going to get 100% tax-free Social Security. And that is worth so much more. You know, all these, a lot of people will do all these calculations of should I convert, should I not convert, should I put this in a regular account or a Roth account. They don't factor in the taxation of Social Security into their calculations. And the taxation of Social Security can greatly be controlled by taking money from a Roth. And why not take all money from a Roth? You'll get 100% tax-free Social Security. And since up to 85% of your Social Security under current laws can be taxable, that could save you, Chris, a heck of a lot of money.
Right, exactly.
So for a variety of reasons, I'm really going to want him to maintain that Roth and instead fund this via a traditional mortgage on his house that's fully paid off. One of these special mortgages available to people over the age of 62 that you can easily get and you won't have to pay anything until you pay the house, sell the house, or a bridge loan or construction loan from a traditional lender as you build your home. And the fact that you're going to have $200,000 of equity into your home because you'll start with your own $200,000, you may not even need a bridge loan or construction loan. There may be enough equity by then in the home, you'll get a traditional mortgage. So all these options are available to you. And in 14 years, there could be something else we're not even talking about.
Right.
So I want to give him kudos for thinking ahead. I think he's on the right track. I think you would agree. As a 50-year-old, to have this much money saved and he's looking at another home, I think he's doing very well. But kind of lay off the Roth. You're going to want that money for other reasons and do this via loans.
Perfect.
All right.
So now those are the two main questions we had via email. We're now...
those are the only
the rest
two.
Of the well, this week.
Well, you said two main, implying that they were lesser ones. There are no lesser ones.
Well, maybe I got an email.
Did you? Read it.
I didn't bring it in.
What'd you get?
Well, I got an email from Julia.
She works for me.
She asked me questions, though.
Did you feel wanted?
Yeah, I guess. Needed. So, but now we're going to talk about there's a the fine state of Oregon you mentioned as a possible retirement place. By the way, the things that have happened are happening to Colorado happened to Oregon and are in progress of happening to Oregon at a breakneck speed.
I know. So, there's no really safe place for me to move to.
Well, at least until more of the baby boomers die off, because they're the real mobile ones who are kind of moving to all these places.
No. And, yeah. Anyway. We shall see.
So a fine senator from the state of Oregon actually has proposed via a bill to make some fairly
significant
changes to the way IRAs, Roth IRAs, traditional IRAs, function and rules about what you can do with them, what you can't do with them.
And the reason we want to share this is, first of all, none of these are going to see the light of day right now. It's not to say they won't. They're just no way near seeing the light of day. First of all, we're knee-deep into an election. This bill is not going to move forward. There's a lot of acrimony. Depending on whether Dumber Dumber gets elected, you're going to see the other party is going to be just as full of vitriol as nothing's going to happen, I guess, is what I'm saying. Until all this dies down, all this political partisanship dies down. But what intrigued me, and this just came out, this bill came out last week, and what intrigued me on it is the thinking. That's why Chris and I did a show, if you remember, on potential changes to Social Security that the government is thinking about. None of these has been proposed. They're just thinking. And this is often how things are done in Washington. The recent change to Social Security that got rid of file and suspend and restricted application, that was floated in the president's budget earlier in the year when he said in his budget he felt those claiming strategies were unfair. That's what we call a, what they call it, a lead balloon. They want to see if it floats or not. Isn't that something the saying goes?
No, but they're going to float a balloon to see
see if it's made out of lead or not.
True.
It's some sort of saying with a lead balloon.
Mm-hmm.
All right, just, I'm cool on that one?
Fairly, yeah.
All right, good. Well, usually you like hop on me for saying something half-assed. Oops.
They usually say float an idea or something, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Can that words be on AM radio? Because it can certainly be on iTunes.
We're going to roll with it.
We're going to roll with it? Mm-hmm. We'll see what KFK says.
Well, they don't
if
listen.
We had no longer, KFK doesn't listen either, so who knows?
It'll fly.
All right, cool. All right, so what intrigued me on this is I want you, as we go through this, listeners, just like we did with the Social Security class, Social Security show about a month ago, these are just proposals, but it gives us a glimpse into what they're thinking and how they're looking at things. And that's what intrigued me with this, because some of what they want to do, I hope they never do. Other things which sound good, I still hope they don't do. And we'll talk about that.
And some stuff isn't that bad.
And some stuff isn't that bad, and I hope they do it. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first one was the first part of the proposal. After December 31st, 2016, and again, this date, don't even ignore that date. It ain't going to happen next year or this year. This is the end of this year. After December 31st, 2016, all Roth IRA conversions would be eliminated.
And all. That's where conversions are, where you take pre-tax money from, say, a traditional IRA or a 401k and move them to a Roth. And during that that act, you recognize that as income because it hadn't been recognized as income for tax purposes before that. If you're talking about deductible contributions, which is what most people are familiar with and why they contribute to those accounts. But now you have a taxable event. You recognize it one time, and then once it's in the Roth, there's no further taxes for any qualified distributions. So there is, this proposal is just slam the door on that. They're just saying no more conversions. The only way you can get money into the Roth is through contributions, which right now are limited to $5,500 if you're under the age of 55, or $6,500 a year if you're age 50 or over. And that would be the only entryway.
And
into
this
the Roth.
Part of his bill won't see the light of day. This won't happen because the government loves conversions.
Mm-hmm.
Why? They're short-term thinkers. They don't care about future politicians. They only care about themselves. And when you convert, you got to pay taxes today.
Mm-hmm.
And that puts more money in their pockets that they can spend so they can buy more votes and stay in power. So they love conversions.
Mm-hmm.
I think where this man made a mistake, we haven't mentioned it. We mentioned his name was Senator Ron Wyden, Democrat, Oregon. Just so people know who proposed
this. I wasn't
going
to pick on him. I was just being more general. Although there's only two senators from the fine state of Oregon, so people could have figured out which one it probably was. But
name rise with Dawn. Dawn, Ron, see? All right.
We've already said it once out loud.
Ron Wyden. Mm-hmm. Okay. Where I think he's going with this, I think the president's proposal, we talked about this on previous shows, I really think the president's proposal will see the light of day, not Ron's. Ron says he wants to eliminate all Roth IRA conversions. President Obama, who won't be president much longer, so he won't get the bill through. But again, it gives us a glimpse into what politicians are thinking. He wants to close the backdoor Roth IRA strategy. and a lot of politicians on both sides of the aisle want to close that loophole. And that's where somebody who makes too much money to contribute to a Roth IRA contributes instead to a non-deductible traditional IRA. Anybody, Bill Gates himself, can put money into a non-deductible traditional IRA. By non-deductible, that means you don't put money in and deduct it on your taxes. You put after-tax money into the IRA. Anybody can put money into a non-deductible IRA. And then you turn around a week later, a month later, however much longer later, and you convert it. Mm-hmm. 100% tax-free. Why is it tax-free conversion? Because you didn't deduct it on your taxes.
You already paid tax on it.
You can you convert it and owe no taxes, and effectively, somebody who made too much money to put money into a Roth IRA got money into a Roth IRA.
Right, and that's why they call it the back door. It's effectively accomplishes a contribution to a Roth, but you take a couple steps to get there. And I agree, that is probably what a person would call a loophole in the law, but it is the law right now. I doubt they intentionally left that in there, because clearly them having an income limit to allow Roth contributions, they were trying to shut the door on people who make over a certain amount. For a single person, that amount is about $132,000. For a married couple, it's about $190,000. And if you exceeded those income limits, they wanted to shut the door on making contributions. They wouldn't have intentionally given you an easy way to go in the back door, but that still exists. And there's been proposals, including from the president himself, to close that loophole. And you could close it a couple of ways. They've proposed shutting off conversions of post-tax dollars. So those dollars that, in Jim's scenario, that where you paid taxes up front, but then you do a tax-free conversion, it would close the door on those, but still allow traditional conversions.
Right, and that's what President Obama wants.
So here, Senator Wyden?
Wyden.
Wyden has decided to just shut all doors to conversions, which is kind of odd, I think, but yeah. I agree with you. Probably not going to see this one.
This one won't see the light of day, but I think the president's proposal, which has wide bipartisan support, will see the light of day, because they're trying to close the loophole. They didn't want people above a certain means level to put money into a Roth IRA, and they've got to close that loophole to do it. So I think what the president has proposed will work, not what Ron's proposed. Okay, the next thing is unique. It could see the light of day, I think, because it won't impact hardly anybody. He wants to prevent anyone with a Roth IRA of more than $5 million adjusted for inflation to ever contributing to a Roth again.
Hmm.
So it kind of goes back to, if you remember, when Mitt Romney was running and there was a rumor, never proved, but a rumor that he had like, what, $200 million or $400 million IRA that was started, that he had this massive-sized IRA, not a Roth IRA, but a regular IRA. So the president proposed in his budget after he got reelected the very next year a limit on how big an IRA can be. And it was going to be based on a pension payment for life of a certain amount, and you had to do a net present calculation. It was just this really obscure rule that he was going to put in place and make monitoring next to impossible. Wyden comes out and says, look, we're not going to do it that way. We're not going to make you do all these net present calculations to determine if you can have a Roth IRA. He's just going to come out and say, if your Roth IRA is $5 million or bigger, you can't put any more money in, conversions or contributions. And he
goes, very, very few people would fall into that category.
Yes. And that's why
you couldn't get there with contributions alone. It would have to be a conversion from a very large employer-sponsored plan or some plan like that that you could load up with a lot more money. The number of people, I personally don't know a single person with anywhere near $5 million in a Roth. But I'm sure six or seven of them exist.
And clearly, he's going after Roth IRAs. Because to get $5 million in a Roth, that would be really hard. Because it's not like you're doing a rollover of employer contributions and your contributions from a 401k and all this. It's going to be really hard to get $5 million in a Roth. But clearly, this senator doesn't like Roths. And that's the key I'm going to lead in the next segment. I personally feel they're going to come after Roth someday. Because here it is. You already see it bubbling under the surface here. No Roth conversions, no Roths more than $5 million. Eventually, I think they're going to get rid of Roths because they are a wonderful thing. And it's part of the reason we encourage people to get as much in as you can. Again, going back to these people who do these calculations, you're assuming Roths are always going to be around. I don't. And we'll talk about that when we come back.
Perfect. So when we come back, we're going to hear the number one song from 1976. This week, the song was created when a disgruntled audience member made sure the band needed to play something with a more disco beat. So let's do an audience request led to this song. So we'll find out what song that is when we return after this short break on the Retirement and IRA Show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's jimhelps.com or call 970-530-0556.
Welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. The second week in a row, that is the number one song from this week in 1976 as we look back 40 years in honor of the 40 elapsed years rule from Social Security. First listened to a song from 1935 in the first after the first segment.
My, how music changed from 1935 to 1976.
That's quite a ways. That's true. I don't think Duke Ellington did any funk.
No.
No. So that is, you recall from last week, Play That Funky Music by Wild Cherry. So apparently during one of their concerts in a bar, in some type of venue, an audience member shouted out to the band, play some funky music. And that stuck in the band leader's head, and he came up with this song. So it's worked out for him.
Now, did the guy who shouted that out get any royalties?
I don't think so. That's quite unfair, if you ask me.
I agree.
Okay. So we're talking about proposed changes, or, you know, they technically are proposed by this senator in the great state of Oregon, and Senator Wyden, I believe. Ron Wyden, who's proposed a series of changes to IRAs, particularly Roths. He seems to be targeting Roths. And while a lot of these will be modified or eliminated as time goes on, as this proposal makes its way through Congress, you're going to probably see some of them pop up in some form or another. So this is just a way to kind of keep it on your radar so that you know what's happening, and also a reason why Jim and I encourage people to load as much into Roths as they can before they start making some of these restrictive changes, because generally when they make these changes, they'll grandfather in those folks who have been participating under the old rules, but they will change them, at, draw a line in the sand, if you will, so that anything past that behave has to follow the new rules. So if you like the old rules, pile up as much as you can in these accounts because there's changes a coming, I guess.
Right, and I just feel, and it's no time soon, so don't panic, people. But I think eventually they're going to say Roths are too good to be true mm-hmm. because tax-free growth is just phenomenal, and they're going to say no more. I just feel they are because...
Well, the one thing I'll tell you that's been survived longer than I thought is the step-up in basis rule, where essentially a person, you know, that is one act where a person can take, well, even though it wasn't your choice,
yeah,
when you pass away, just die, and suddenly all the taxes that you owe on the gains in your investments mysteriously disappears. And the beneficiary, whoever inherits those assets from you, gets to start fresh with no tax liability whatsoever. And that's survived for decades and decades at this point. So who knows how long, but I agree with you, they're a target. And Senator Wyden is proving that because he's calling the Roths out in several areas and wanting to restrict
yes.
them.
Okay, so more proposals that he made. He wants to abolish the age limit. He wants to repeal the age limit for contributing to a traditional IRA.
So I don't, this is kind of like that $5 million cap on Roths. I don't think there's a heck of a lot of people
because
it would only affect people
over
who
the age
are
of
working
and, a half. Yeah.
And who are working over 70 and a half because right. you'd still have to have earned income.
And you can't put money, if you're still working, you can't put money in a traditional IRA after the age of 70 and a half. He wants to abolish that. I have no problem with that. I think that's an arbitrary rule because you can still put money in a 401k after the age of 70 and a half. You can still put money in a SEP IRA if you're a self-employed person. Into a SEP IRA after 70 and a half, you just also have to take an RMD from it. So if you can put it in one IRA and one account, why can't you do it in all? So mm-hmm. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. He wants to, for balances, IRA balances under $150,000 or lower, remove required minimum distributions.
I like this one myself. Because
I like it, but I think it's not going to be. If you have that little of money, you may need the money. So an RMD isn't an issue to you. You have to take it out. The people who complain most about required minimum distributions are those who don't need the money. Now, you could get situations where, and this could be a handout to government employees, a lot of government employees are pension rich, asset poor, mm-hmm. and they have tremendous government pensions, but very small retirement accounts. They complain a lot about having to take RMDs because they don't need it because they get such a wonderful pension. So maybe I'm being a little harsh on this one and looking at it differently. I think what he's saying is if you don't have much money, we're not going to force you to take it out. But if you don't have much money, you may have to take it out.
I agree with that part of it. The reason why I would support this is that wealthy people tend to have a lot of flexibility. They have a lot of choices, a lot of things they can do to shift from here or there, choose to take money from this and not that, that type of thing. People with limited assets, a lot of times, their options are very restricted. So I think being forced to take out RMDs, while I agree, most of them probably are taking out the money anyway because they need to live on it. But for those who don't, I think it's fairly burdensome for people with limited assets, which, you know, less than $100,000 in an IRA is pretty limited. I think it gives them some flexibility that would be welcomed with open arms, even though most may very well be taking out the money anyway.
But again, I think you'll have the law of unintended consequences of people who are pension rich also taking advantage of this because it's based on, at least under the current approach, it's based on the size of your IRA, not the income you're mm-hmm. generating.
Yeah, and that's something I could maybe alter. And that's, but I don't know. I don't think this one's headed for.
This was in the president's budget as well. Yeah. So I don't know if it, I don't see why it wouldn't have bipartisan support. I mean, I don't see why it wouldn't, but I also don't mm-hmm. see how this is going to help someone of little means. Gee, I only have $150,000. Okay, you don't have to take any money out. Well, if you don't have enough money, you're going to be forced to take it out. You have to take it out. Why not say if you have less than a certain amount, your money from your IRA is tax-free? We want to help you in retirement. Well, that would be nice. But no RMDs, mm-hmm. big deal. If you don't have much money, you're going to need to take the money out. That doesn't help you. Mm-hmm. Why not make it tax-free? Okay, so anyways, that was one of the options. And again, that one has been proposed before in the president's budget. I don't see why Republicans would not support that one. So you very well may see it. I just, as a retirement planner, I just think that's more window dressing than anything. It's a lot of fluff. It's not a lot of cake. Oh, a lot of frosting, not a lot of cake. However that saying goes. How does that saying go?
Frosting and cake is pretty good.
No, something about something's more frosting than cake. It's just not a lot there. It's like hollow. It's
more sizzled than steak.
Oh, is that how it goes?
I don't know. I just made that one up.
Oh, I like that one better than frosting on cake, although now I'm getting hungry. Okay.
How about frosting on steak?
Ooh, frosting on steak. I think you see more people eating steak. Okay, here's another one about required minimum distributions. He wants to raise your required beginning date.
From the year.
I actually support this one. Instead of age 70 and a half as the required beginning date for kicking off when you have to do RMDs, wants to raise it to 72. And then after 2028, I don't know how he arbitrarily chooses these years, he wants to peg it to mortality tables.
Mm.
So I think what they're trying to address here is that people are living longer.
Mm-hmm. And working longer a lot of times.
So rather than have you start debiting your account right away at 70 and a half, go to 72, which is good. Get rid of the darn half. That confuses people. When are you 70 and a half? Just get rid of that. And in fact, it begins by raising it first to 71. So instead of beginning at 70 and a half, just get rid of the half. He doesn't round down to 70. He says it begins at 71. Mm-hmm. Then in 2023, it's 72. And after 2028, another 5 years later, it will be pegged and adjusted for longevity. So he's just trying to, I think, allow your IRA or retirement accounts, period, stay open a little longer before you have to debit from them. This one I have no problem with. Mm-hmm. And get rid of the 70 and a half. You and I for years would say, how'd they come up with 70 and a half? Why not 70? Why not 71? Could they not make up their mind so someone just says, hey, we got to get home to our wives and kids. Let's just say 70 and a half because this half of the room wants it 70 and this half of the room wants it 71.
That's probably a coin flip is probably what happened or something like that.
And the coin didn't land
we
on
should
either
look,
side?
I'll do a little research and see if I can figure it out because that is fascinating that they picked 59 and a half for the end of early withdrawal penalties and then 70 and a half for RMDs, so I'll.
I don't.
There had to be some. You can go back and look at the notes of the discussion and the debate that was had before these laws were put into place.
But anyways, I find it interesting. I understand why they're doing it. Remember, required minimum distributions. You have no choice. You must begin under current rules in the year you turn 70 and a half, which for everyone born from June 30th or earlier, so between January 1st and June 30th, you will turn 70 and a half. In the year you turn 70. But for everybody born July 1st or later, you don't turn 70 and a half until the year you actually turn 71. So it gets very confusing for people on when they have to start doing this.
For sure.
So they're just trying to get, for simplicity's sake, I support this one. Okay. This next one is just odd. And the article I read on it doesn't give me enough info. But it says student loan payment matching contribution. He wants to match, and I don't know if it's dollar for dollar, the government will match a student loan payment by making a contribution to a MIRA account for that taxpayer.
Hmm.
For those who don't know MIRAs, that's M, capital M, small y, R, A, my retirement account. And I gave President Obama kudos. He came up with this. I don't know if he did. He put his name on it. Someone else probably came up with it. I loved that acronym. I just thought, remember, because we were trying to, better than my URA. Do you remember the URA?
Yeah.
the URA?
Well, the URA still could happen because this isn't an URA. What we envision to be an URA is not replaced by a MIRA.
No, but
MIRA
the name
is very different.
The name is much better.
I don't know. URA, that's pretty good.
You like URA?
It's kind of grown on me all
Universal Retirement Account?
Yeah.
Okay. That was my idea that get rid of all these different accounts. We have an alphabet soup of all these different things. IRAs, 401Ks, 403Bs, 457s, pension plans, TSPs, thrifts. Just get rid of them all and have an URA. And the first job you ever get from 16, this account follows you around like a bad cold. Like my cold I can't get rid of. This account just follows you around, and 10% of your salary has to go into it. No ifs, ands, and buts, and no ability to get that money out until you retire.
And in the agricultural community, they could have a MURA.
MURA?
Yeah.
What would the M stand for?
My Universal Retirement Account, but it makes the moo sound, so.
Would that be in dairy, not necessarily agriculture?
I was being more general, but sure, that really targeting the
dairy
industry.
Workers, yeah.
MURA.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so
I like that one.
A MIRA account, we don't want to get into it because we talked about these on previous shows. If you go to our website, jimhelps.com.
Could do a PURA.
That's okay.
Personal Universal Retirement Account?
Yes, oh, I get an RR. He said poo.
I said poo on the radio.
Okay, so right now we have MIRAs. If you go to our website, Jim Helps, that's jimhelps.com, click on the homepage, you will see about two-thirds of the way down a link to our radio show's website. If you just click that link, go to the radio show's website, and in the search box, type M-Y-R-A, MIRA. Many shows should pop up, correct?
I haven't looked for a while, but we've done several on MIRAs, at least two.
As far as the government making a matching contribution to students who are paying back loans, as you said, Chris, they're essentially paying your loan.
Right. Because when you put in $1 on one hand, they're giving you a dollar maybe or some amount on the other. If they're not matching it dollar for dollar, they're at least discounting, you're getting a deal on making those loan payments, which might be his goal, to encourage people to make their student loan payments and also reduce the burden of those student loan payments. So I can understand the goal. It's kind of a bizarro way to accomplish it and sounds very expensive from the government.
That's the thing. I mean, I don't want to turn this into a student loan discussion, but there's so much political push. Ever since the government took over student loans in 2010, they become politicized. And there's these huge pushes to exempt students from having to pay back their debt. And I am dead against that. We don't have the money to just send everyone to school in this country. I don't care how nice it sounds. We don't have it. We have $20 trillion in debt. We can't pay for these kids' schooling. You want to go to college? Pay for it. My God. You got a free ride from kindergarten all the way up, and now there's pre-K, universal K, this K, that K. You haven't paid for anything since you were three. So stop paying for your college and suck it up.
Well, I think one of the things they could do from the government standpoint is do a better job at educating students before they take out these loans as to the burden it's going to create for them, and have them think of maybe other alternatives to doing it. Whether they even put restrictions on it, but just the educational piece. I don't usually get students in my classroom until they're sophomores, late sophomores, early juniors is when I start to see them. By that time, it's a little late. I give them the speech about, you know, you really have to look at this and what the burden it's going to place on you after you graduate. Right now, it's no big deal because you don't have to make payments, but those payments are going to start and follow you around for a very long period of time unless you happen to be lucky enough to make a ton of money right out of school. So, but we have all these people that are heading into degree programs that have a very low expected salary when they graduate, and the government is willing to loan them just as much money as they loan an engineering major or, you know, somebody else who's going to earn three times what that liberal arts major is going to earn.
The Consumer Reports, I love that magazine, did a cover story recently on the quote-unquote student loan crisis, really pushing for the government to pay everyone's student loans off. And I'm afraid this is going to be so politicized it's going to happen someday. And as a taxpayer, I am dead against it. We don't have the money and going forward. But they talked about, they began the story with this woman who's 153 or 158,000, I forget, in debt for her nursing degree. And she's only making $60,000 as a nurse, the article said, and these loan payments are killing her. I wanted to try to find this author or the student and ask, how the hell did you get $153,000 in debt to get a nursing degree? My sister is an RN. She didn't go $153,000 in debt. So what did you do with all this money? How did you spend $153,000 to get a nursing degree? You could go to a community college for 2 years and get an RN. So where the heck did you spend $153,000? That was my question, but you hit the nail on the head. These people go to school and like, oh, I'm majoring in European antique poetry. And they go $300,000 in a debt and then they're crying. Well, you should have looked at before you went into European antique poetry, looked at the job market.
And if they're not going to restrict it, so I understand how political that will be, because then it would be a form of discrimination that we're saying, you know, engineering students are worth more than European antique poetry students, so, you know, because we're going to loan them different amounts. I get how that could be kind of political, but so at the minimum, there needs to be better education to even the engineering student can get carried away. I think there needs to be better education up front before they let them borrow a single dollar.
I totally agree. Because when an elderly person over the age of 62 tries to borrow money, like we told the previous listener early in the show, on that special kind of mortgage available to them, they have to go to a class that they pay for, $125, that the government makes them go to before they borrow any money. And this is a loan program backed by the government. And that's why the government does this. Mm-hmm. But a student loan, oh, yeah, you want to be a nurse? Sure, go $153,000 in a debt. We'll keep giving you the money. It's nuts. So anyways, this gentleman wants to take your student loan payments and put it in as a MIRA, a matching contribution to your MIRA account. Effectively, he wants to pay for your student loans. Mm-hmm. And as a taxpayer, I am just so vehemently against. I don't have kids. You got six. But when this country goes into debt, all we're doing is robbing from future generations to satisfy current generations. So you're going to try to placate a bunch of whining, snot-nosed kids who don't want to be in debt and now have to pay it back by robbing from future generations. We don't have the money to get. Why don't we just pass a law that nobody has to work in this country? Government's just going to keep giving us money for as long as we need it by printing it out of thin air. I mean, hey, I'd love that. I'd love to spend the next 30 years of my life doing nothing. That'd be great. But the reality is we can't. We just don't have the money. And they've got to control us. So I'm against this part. Maybe I got a little too political and fired up on this one. But no, I'm against this. You're not going to start contributing student loan payments to a government-run. The MIRA, by the way, is a government-run retirement account. And you're going to start contributing to that. And I guess no one told this brilliant senator, you can't put more than $15,000 into a MIRA. So is it limited to just your first $15,000 of student loan debt?
Maybe.
I mean,
there's no detail there.
There's no detail on it. So anyways, I'm against that one. Okay. Here's one that I don't mind at all. I'd like to see it equal. And do we have enough time, or are you going to start the music?
No, we have 4 minutes.
He wants to allow non-spouse beneficiaries who inherit a IRA to do a 60-day rollover. Right now, only spousal beneficiaries can. So if a spouse inherits an IRA and wants to move it to her own, she can close the IRA from her decedent, or he can close it from his decedent, take the money in cash, and put it into a new IRA within 60 days. Mm-hmm. What they want to allow, you still can't put it into your own IRA like a spouse can. You have to put it in an inherited IRA, but allow you to do it as a rollover. I'm all for that for one reason. So many people inherit these accounts, Chris, and don't know the rules. And they inherit an IRA from their parents or grandparents. They go to the custodian, and they're like, oh, close the account and send me the money. Mm-hmm. And it's later they realize, oh my God, this was an IRA. I got to pay taxes on this. I didn't know it. And it's too late. They can't get it back into an inherited IRA because they moved the money as a rollover, which is, in other words, they took the money in cash. I like this rule because so many times we listen when we go to the Ed Slott program. He reads private letter ruling after private letter ruling after private letter ruling, denying the ability of a non-spouse beneficiary who didn't know the rules but found out later he couldn't, you know, I shouldn't have taken this money out, and it's too late. You can't put it back in. Mm-hmm. So this would at least give them 60 days to get the money back in.
It's more a rule not to enable people to do something they want to do, because you can always do a direct transfer. It's really to protect people who accidentally do it the wrong way. It's a weird way of passing a law to protect people from their accidental mistakes.
Exactly. And it just tells you how complicated all these rules are. Mm-hmm. So I actually support Mr. Wyden's or Senator Wyden's proposal on this one. Mm-hmm. Dead against the student loan payment, but do support this one. So I have no problem with that one. Okay, how much time do we have left?
A little less than 2 minutes.
Oh, goodness, that's plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he wants to... trying to read here as I do this, because this one's going to be way confusing to talk about.
Well, that's not going to fit in 2 minutes.
That's not going to fit
now
in 2 minutes.
Now a minute and a half.
Now a minute and a half. Okay. This one is interesting. What he's trying to close down are ROBs. As Ed Slott says, any acronym the IRS gives that is ROBS, you may not want to consider doing. The IRS gave them, ROBS, roll over, R-O, roll over for business startup. The acronym is ROBS. That's where these companies are touting an alleged scheme, as Ed Slott says, to take money, roll it over, take it out, put it into an IRA, and then use the money in that IRA to invest in your business. And they claim if you create an LLC that holds the business and another LLC that the IRA is investing in, and they walk you through how you do it.
Collect a fee for telling you.
They want to close the ROB loophole, and I'll talk about that when we come back.
Perfect. So when we come back from this final break, we're going to hear the number one song from this week in 1981 as we will look back 35 years in honor of the 35 computational years that go into your Social Security retirement benefit calculation. And even though Endless Love remains at number one still this week, we're not going to play it because it stays forever and ever and ever. We're going to play instead a song that was originally recorded in 1978 as a reggae-style song by this British invasion rock band. So we'll find out what that is all about after this next break.
Are you interested in your own customized Social Security analysis? If so, visit us at helpwithmysocialsecurity.com and click the Contact Jim and Chris button. Jim and Chris offer a $75 Social Security optimization analysis that includes a one-hour consultation to discuss the specifics of your Social Security situation. This very affordable offer is for both singles and couples and will provide you with the information you need to make an informed decision about claiming your Social Security benefit.
Well, welcome back to the Retirement and IRA Show. We go from funky music in 1976 to a little bit of rock and roll in 1981 that apparently started as a reggae song. I didn't realize that. That, of course, is Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones. So the reggae version was eventually shelved and would have been forgotten had it not been for the band's engineer. So when they were about to go out on tour in 1981, he decided to take a quick look through the archives to see if there was anything they could bring back to life. And they redid it without the reggae flavor. And there it is, one of their biggest hits and the number one song this week in 1981, a mere 35 years ago.
Interesting.
Yeah. So we take
Why
a listen
do
to
this?
The... I'm telling them.
Oh.
Easy. So in 1935, two things happened. One, Duke Ellington's Accent on Youth, which we heard after the first break, was a fabulous song back then and still is today. But in 1935, Social Security started. And then 40 years ago in 1976, Play That Funky Music was going on. And 40 years ago kind of ties into 40 elapsed years, which is one of the original parts of the Social Security regulations in determining your retirement benefit. But then we roll to 35 years ago in 1981, which was Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones. And that's in reference to the 35 computational years, which, by the way, is simply 40 elapsed years minus 5. That's how we get to 35 computational years. And those are the years that they actually include in the calculation directly that gets to your AMI, Average Indexed Monthly Earnings, which then leads through another formula to your PIA, your primary insurance amount, otherwise known as your full retirement age retirement benefit. So all this has some strange connection, as you can tell, to Social Security, and that leads us up to our update on what's new with helpwithmysocialsecurity.com.
What's new, pussycat? Whoa, whoa, whoa. What's new, pussycat? Whoa, 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 whoa.
And that, of course, is Tom Jones from an unknown year. I don't know off the top of my head. What do you suppose that was?
60-something.
Yeah, I think so. 68?
I don't know.
I'll have to look it up. But we do a blog, Jim and I, mostly me, called helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, where instead of, unlike the Retirement and IRA show, where we talk about a plethora of topics on retirement and IRAs, that's the focus, but we talk about all kinds of things that are related to retirement, including some Social Security, on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, it is 100% all the time Social Security topics. And that's because those rules are so complicated, there's so many choices that you have to make, and it's important that you make those choices with all available information so that you don't end up leaving money on the table, per se. So this week on helpwithmysocialsecurity.com, I talk about, what's the topic here? Oh, when can I claim my Social Security benefits? A clarification of exactly when it is that you can file for the first time for your retirement benefit. We talk about it being 62, but it's more complicated, of course, than that. It is the month in which you are 62 for the entire month. So it isn't the month that you turn 62 unless you were born on the first or second day of the month. So of course, you know, if you were born on the 15th of the month, you turn 62 on the 15th of the month, but you haven't been 62 all month, so you don't get benefits for that month. Your first benefits are the following month, which will then be paid to you at their earliest the month following that. So your first payment wouldn't be received until essentially 2 months from your 62nd birthday. Some people don't realize that. But I mentioned the first or second day of the month. They have this weirdo rule that if you were born on the first or second of the month, you're considered to have lived the entire month at that new age. So those of us born on the first of the month, like me, or the second of the month, like other people, we actually could, if we're claiming Social Security at the earliest possible time, I, being born on the first, and my friends born on the second, would be able to collect one additional Social Security payment than the rest of the planet that was born on the third through the end of the month.
The big thing we want people to take out of this, and I'm not sure because I haven't read Chris's blog post if he talked about it, so many people don't factor this in, and they're surprised they got to come up with a few months' income.
Right, they plan on retiring on their 62nd birthday, for instance.
Right.
And you better have a little bit saved up.
Exactly.
Because it's going to be at least 60 days. And that's only if you planned ahead and went in and filed before your... They recommend you file 3 to 4 months prior to when you actually want to start collecting. If you delay that, you'll still be paid for all the months that you're entitled. However, it might come late, and then they'll kind of make it up to you in a lump sum. But it takes them some time to process your application and get it fully approved and loaded into the system for them to start making those monthly mm-hmm. deposits for you. So we talk about those kinds of things. You might think that, you know, how can you possibly talk about when can I claim my Social Security benefits? But it's complicated.
It can be.
So
okay.
That's what's new.
What's new, pussycat?
And June 2nd, 1965.
So we're close.
And it was the theme song from the 1965 mm-hmm. Woody Allen movie.
Yep.
Starring Peter O'Toole and Peter Sellers. Mm-hmm.
So you've successfully manipulated your microphone so much now you've loosened it up again.
I know,
so
I did it again, so I got to hold it.
So go like this.
Go like this?
No, like this. No.
It'll work.
Jim's not particularly mechanically inclined.
I'm not very mechanically inclined. But anyways, I figured I would tell you that What's New Pussycat came out in 1965, and it was Tom Jones' third hit. And it was nominated. It didn't say. I didn't read. I didn't click through. It was nominated for an Academy Award
for best
original song in 1966.
And it didn't win.
I don't know. I didn't click wiki, so now I got to click it. So
well,
I'll
click
tell
it because if they didn't win, I'd like to know who did, because Tom Jones is top of my list.
It peaked at number 11 in the U.S., mm-hmm. in Europe, and number 3 in America.
Mm-hmm.
And it does not say if it won, so I'm going to assume it didn't. It just said it was nominated for the Academy Award of Best Original Song in 1966.
Okay. Well, while you're talking about these, I'm going to go find out what that was. Who won?
Who was the 1966 Academy Award winner for Best Original Song? And it has to be better than Tom Jones in What's New Pussycat. Okay. This next one, folks, of changes that this senator is proposing is one we have been warning, Chris, our listeners for a very long time is coming. And this change has bipartisan support. The president had it in his budget. This senator has it in his bill. And the Supreme Court effectively put the nail in the coffin when they ruled an inherited IRA is not a retirement account. They ruled that a few years ago. They want to abolish the stretch out and subject non-spouse beneficiaries to the 5-year rule, which means a non-spouse beneficiary will have to close an inherited IRA within 5 years. Why do they want to do that? Well, folks, let's just say you're leaving a $500,000 IRA to your son. And your son is an engineer. We were talking about engineers before. So they're a computer engineer pulling in $150,000 a year. I'm just making that number up. Now he inherits a $100,000 IRA. Under current rules, let's say your son is 40 years old, he can leave that IRA open for a good 35, 40 years. I don't have the single life table in front of me, but that IRA can stay open for quite a long time, mm-hmm. and he just takes out a very little amount every single year for 35 or 40 years. That effectively, Chris, spreads the tax burden out in a very low marginal bracket. So the government is not getting much in taxes. They don't get it very quickly. They got to wait a long time to get it. And it's taxed at a much lower rate than if they were to have forced him to close it faster and take more money out. That puts more money in their pockets faster and pushes them in a higher marginal bracket. Because now he's faced with either taking all $500,000 out in 1 year, which he could pretty much kiss almost half of it goodbye between state and federal taxes, or spread it out. So he takes 20% a year out for 5 years. He'd still have to take an extra $100,000 a year, Chris, taking his income from $150,000 to $250,000 and pushing his marginal bracket even higher. So that's why they are going to force people to close it. Actually, let me just phrase that, not close it. They're actually going to force people to go back to the way the rules used to be. It used to be you had to close IRAs that fast as a non-spouse beneficiary. Then I believe it was in 2000, the Bush administration changed the law and signed it into law that created the stretch out provision. So they want to go back. I think it's going to happen. The problem is in his bill, he took something that was fairly easy and made it incredibly complex. Mm-hmm. Because who's exempted from it? Shall I read from the list of, I guess we should say,
exceptions?
Victims du jour?
Sure.
Who will be exempt from this? Okay. So obviously spouses, which is typical because a spouse is allowed to take an inherited account and turn it into their own IRA. So of course you're going to exempt spouses. Then you will exempt minor children of the decedent. Mm-hmm. So does that mean when they reach the age of majority, which varies between 18 and 21, they then have to close it? I don't know. But minor children, disabled people, chronically ill people, any person or any beneficiary who is less than 10 years younger than the decedent. Can you see how easy this is going to be to follow? Union members. Now, why is that one in there?
Let me guess.
I don't know. I'm just asking. It's union. Okay. Union members. Government plans. Participants in government plans. So you TSP people. So you see how they do carve-outs? Well, we're going to subject this not to our union allies and not to our government plans. So government plans, union plans. And the last one is, oh, that was it. Government and union plans as well. And certain annuities, but he does not define what annuities, but it's got to be QLEX.
Oh.
I'm just guessing because QLEX are exempt. I don't know, but I could be wrong on that one. I don't know for the life of me why union plans and government plans are being exempted. I really hate when the government pass rules that everybody has to abide by except for their allies and members. It just makes us feel like second-class citizens.
Feels like I need to take a shower. It's kind of slimy.
So I understand why they're doing this. It's a boon to them for revenue because it forces non-spouse beneficiaries to close accounts, especially very large accounts, 300, 400, 500,000, $1 million IRAs. You're going to see these have to be closed and be taxed at very high rates. What bugs the heck out of me, Chris, are now all these carve-outs. They're taking something that's fairly straightforward, especially this beneficiary rule. So a non-spouse beneficiary more than 10 years younger than you is okay. Or less than 10 years younger than you.
So marry young.
No, non-spouse beneficiaries. A non-spouse beneficiary.
Oh, date young.
Date young, yeah. It's really, you're going to throw these rules in there and just make this more complicated. Yeah. Either close them or leave them open. Yep. Don't start doing these carve-outs. That's the thing that bugs me the most on this. But I do warn people, and this is one reason we counseled somebody on the radio show recently about this, that they're not factoring in what happens, not only because we did talk recently, what happens to an should we put money in a Roth IRA or non-Roth? Remember we had that conversation, mm-hmm. and we actually had a listener get a hold of us. He had written some spreadsheets and was factoring this in and gave us a lot to think about. And I did reach out to that listener, by the way. He's mm-hmm. an iTunian. Mm-hmm. He will come on the radio show. Feels a little awkward, he said, because I'm just a regular person. I'm not a professional. But he's going to come on and talk about it, and we're going to chat with him about what we think and what he thinks. And I just thought it would make for a good show. Anyways, mm-hmm. I'm just sharing that. But what you start to get – I lost my train of thought now. Where was I going?
Yeah, you have to factor these things in and making the decision between a Roth and a traditional.
Yes. The other thing that people need to factor in as they do these calculations – is who's going to be the ultimate inheritor of this account. And so many people don't look at that. We counseled that couple recently that we felt they should start taking their 403B and put it into a Roth option, not the traditional 403B. And we talked that when one of them dies, there's a survivorship issue, but we also, which can push them into a higher marginal bracket. But we also told them, we didn't tell them, is ultimately both of them are going to die. And we factored in that their Roth when they were 75, their IRA rather, not their Roth, would be worth $3.5 million at 75. Well, let's say one of them dies at 80 and the other one dies at 90. There's still going to be millions in there inherited by who now? A non-spouse beneficiary. Mm-hmm. They're going to be nailed in taxes. Yeah. And all this tax calculation you're doing of, oh, my God, you're in this marginal rate, but in retirement, not my marginal rate, but my effective rate is going to be lower, and I can save $2,000 if I do this every year. That goes out the door. Because under this rule, when someone is in, now you're talking someone inheriting $2-3 million, they're going to be forced to give up half of that. Because every distribution is going to push them into a massive tax bracket.
Yep.
And that's what I'm trying to get people to understand.
And that kind of goes to our concept of tax diversification.
Exactly.
We don't know exactly what things are going to be like in 15, 20, 25 years. And the way you manage, if you will, some of those unknowns, those risks, is don't put all your eggs in one basket. And this is, we're not talking about investments here. We're talking about
taxes,
tax exposures.
Exactly. So at least, and we weren't in that case. They were putting 64 or 65 or 61,000. We were advocating about a third of that into a Roth. The other two thirds they had to keep in a traditional.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people don't factor in, as they do these calculations, survivorship. What happens when one of them dies? And then what happens when the second dies? And again, even under current stretch-out rules, the RMDs would be quite large. But the five-year rule is coming. I know it. It's the way it always was. It's coming back. And that blows up all of these calculations you do on whether or not I should put money in a traditional or a non-traditional, unless that person is going to leave their entire retirement account to charity. Then don't.
Plus, it also makes the third thing that comes into mind is not invest within one of these accounts at all. Stay with traditional investments that'll get the step up
in basis.
So
until that goes away someday,
right? Exactly.
Does. So again, this 5-year rule, folks, is going away for non-spouse beneficiaries, and you may do a wonderful job amassing $500,000 or $1 million in an IRA, and maybe converting or contributing to a Roth didn't make sense because you're going to be able to control some of these distributions and stay in a lower effective rate instead of a higher marginal rate, and all these things that go into the calculation. But let me tell you, folks, the minute you die and you don't have a spouse to leave it to, because eventually there'll be no spouses left and it goes to your child, it's going to be nailed in taxes, because now all that money is coming out in 5 years and boom, nailed in taxes. And I wager this is coming. Will it come with all his exemptions? I hope not. I hope they just keep it clean. Don't say union members, government employees, people less than 10 years younger, minors, disabled people. You're going to get people running out and cutting their arm off. Oh, I'm disabled.
That seems a little harsh.
Hey, to save hundreds of thousands of dollars in taxes? I'm just saying. It just is crazy. You're going to have more people now fighting to say they're disabled. It's just, you're going to just get rid of all the complexity. But I am telling you, people, this is a revenue raiser and it's coming. Mm-hmm.
So the most important part of the show is us clarifying, why the heck did What's New Pussycat not win the Oscar for
the
Best Original Song? So the nominees in 1966 for Best Original Song, The Shadow of Your Smile in The Sandpiper. The Ballad of Cat Ballou in Cat Ballou.
No.
I Will Wait for You in The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Nope.
The Sweetheart Tree in The Great Race.
Nope.
And What's New Pussycat in What's New Pussycat. Those were the
That's
five.
That's the one we want.
Those were the five
That's
nominees.
The only song that people still know.
The winner, The Shadow of Your Smile from The Sandpiper. That beat What's New Pussycat.
I don't
by Johnny
understand.
Mandel. Lyrics by Paul Francis Webster. 1966. They were crazy.
Johnny Manziel?
Mandel.
Mr. Football?
His dad. No, it's not. Johnny Mandel with a D as in dog, not Z as in zebra.
Gotcha.
Okay. So I'm glad we got that cleared up. We only have 3.5 minutes. So
all right. I wanted to get to the one, Rob's. We didn't talk about those.
Oh, perfect.
I jumped right into the beneficiary IRA. Mm-hmm. Rob's is another thing they're going to get rid of. Rob's is something that I have warned many people not to do. I still think they do it. Rob's is a theory, a thought being perpetrated by I don't want to say they're doing anything disingenuous, but by groups and organizations that feel this will float. ROBS is the acronym that the IRS gave him, and as Ed says, that's reason enough for him not to recommend them when the IRS calls them ROBS, mm-hmm. Roll Over for Business Startups. But he wants to close these loopholes on ROBS once and for all because he says IRAs will not be able to invest in any entities where the IRA owner owns a substantial portion of the entity, and substantial portion of the entity is defined as 10%. And they will aggregate it amongst family members. And it will include ownership in any partnership, corporation, LLC, unincorporated enterprise, trust, or estate. So they're just going after the whole mm-hmm. gamut here. Yep. Because under a ROB, you create one LLC that owns the shares from another LLC that owns the business that you almost kind of own. And it gets very confusing. It's just convoluted, and the theory is you can take the money from your IRA and give it to one of these LLCs, and that LLC happens to be the LLC that invests in your LLC, so it's not you doing the investing, it's an LLC. He's trying to close that. I would never do a ROB. I confess I don't fully understand them, but when Ed Slott and his minions, he has four people who work under him, when they're all imploring us not to do them, that in their opinion, these things are going to blow up. That's all I need. I pay Ed a lot of money to him do the research to tell me, right. Don't do them. But here they're going after them. So that doesn't surprise me. But the biggest surprise on here is no Roth conversions. That one surprised me. And the one that's not a surprise, but I think is really going to happen, no stretch out for non-spouse beneficiaries. They will have to close your inherited IRA within 5 years of death. And that kind of blows up a lot of the calculations people do on should I do a Roth or a non-Roth? What's my marginal rate? What's my taxable rate? You're going to have to start looking at now, what is your beneficiary's rate? And what is it going to be the value of your IRA and take 20% of that? 20% a year for 5 years, what tax bracket is that going to be taxed at? Mm-hmm.
So right now, I think there's just one sponsor for this bill proposal, right?
Yes.
There's not more than one name on there. So we'll see if this gets any traction, and if so, how it morphs and adapts as we move forward.
But we agree, many of these are coming
pretty slowly. I think they're coming. When is a question, and in what form we'll see them is another. But thanks for joining us again here on the Retirement and IRA Show. We will be back next week with another show. But if you have a question in the meantime, you can contact us at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Saulnier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.